Dark City was one of them films I watched at the exact right age, mm-hmm. the exact right time. Okay. Circumstances were perfect. I fucking adore it. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to hear what you think about it.
Mm. Well. Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast.
Before we get to what we're doing, let's ask the most important question. How you doing, buddy?
I'm so busy, I don't have time to tell you how.
Okay.
How about yourself?
Good.
Yeah?
Fine.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, let's sum up the show a little bit then. Critters got me thinking about films that needed remaking.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about how the director of The Crow came to make Dark City his next project.
Dark City, baby! This film makes no sense.
We're going to get into the politics of Hollywood studios.
It's all nonsense.
Why this film is still beloved by thousands of people.
It is stupid.
And most importantly,
what does it mean? What does it all mean?
Well, don't worry. Don't worry. I'm going to tell you, babe.
Okay.
Now, some people haven't seen this film. They're not planning to.
Good.
How dare you? How dare you? This is a fucking excellent film.
I'm joking.
Some people aren't going to watch it. They got busy lives. We've got busy lives. So let's just recap what the film's about. Act 1, 2, and 3. I've written act titles.
Oh my God, you have.
That way, if you've not seen the film in years and you need a refresher to know what we're talking about later, we've got you. And if you're not planning on watching it, we've got you. But consider this your spoiler warning. Ben, start us off.
I'm so happy that you've put act titles in this. I'm genuinely buzzing.
There you go.
This has made my day.
Good.
Act 1, the good.
John Murdoch wakes up in a hotel bathtub with no memory and finds a murdered body in the bed. We've all been there. Mm. Fleeing the scene, he discovers he's wanted for a string of killings that he has no memory of. So, relatable. As he searches for answers, he's pursued by both the police and pale telekinetic beings called the Strangers. The main ones played by Richard O'Brien of Rocky Horror fame.
Yeah.
Or the Crystal Maze, if you've got no culture.
Yes.
Feel bad about yourself.
Absolutely.
Murdoch begins to uncover clues about his past and realizes he possesses the same reality-altering powers as the Strangers.
Sure. Sure. Act 2. The bad.
The Strangers have built the city as an experiment, constantly altering people's identities and memories while the city sleeps. Murdoch learns from Dr. Schreiber, a scientist working with the Strangers, that the city is a space-bound construct with no real exit. Schreiber is played by Kiefer Sutherland, who you should know from The Lost Boys, or 24, if you've got no culture, feel
Lost
bad
Boys
about yourself. Murdoch's powers grow as he uncovers the truth, and he learns that Shell Beach, a place that everyone remembers but no one can get to, is in fact a total fabrication.
Act 3, and my favourite title, The Stupid.
There you go, the good, the bad, the stupid.
I like it. This is good. Captured by the Strangers, Murdoch is saved by Schreiber, who implants him with knowledge instead of fake memories.
Okay.
Just decides that this is the thing that can happen. Anyway, Murdoch defeats the Strangers' leader by having a staring competition, takes control of the city, and reshapes it, creating an ocean.
He does.
Okay.
Yeah, around the city space station.
Yeah, he makes an ocean. He brings sunlight.
Makes a sun.
And makes Shell Beach real.
Does, yeah.
It's the most important thing that needs to happen right now.
Yeah.
He meets Emma, now called Anna, and they walk together as strangers, meeting for the first time.
Yeah, because Emma, which I forgot to put in the earlier part of the breakdown.
Is his wife.
Is his wife, who he is supposed to remember but doesn't.
Yeah.
And she remembers him because he had his memories put in wrong.
Sure.
By the strangers who are controlling everyone's memories.
Some people's memories. But yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
We'll get into it. Okay, I've seen the Crow.
Yeah.
And it was unequivocally amazing.
Directed by Alex Proyas.
Same director. Same everything. You were like, oh, dude, Alex Proyas, The Crow. I'm like, yeah, fucking yes.
Yeah.
Sign me up, buddy. You were like, Dark City. I'm like, never heard of it.
Yeah.
But I'm excited.
Right.
I was confused. I watched this a couple times, and it doesn't get easier to understand. Hear me out.
Right.
I need to say this top of the show. Me being confused and having a few minor issues with this film has in no way impacted the amount of fun that I had with this film.
Right.
This is an absolute thrill ride.
It is.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Sometimes for the wrong reasons.
Uh-huh.
A lot of time for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And then sometimes for the right reasons.
Right.
But it's a great film. I was confused. I've got my notes here. I've got them up on my screen. I'm gonna share with you my first notes. I say my first notes. I'm going to share with you my only notes because I couldn't keep up with the film on the pacing because it's insane.
Right.
This is my first notes. Ready? Guy wakes up in a bathtub with amnesia. Kiefer scientist knows what's going on and offers to help. Dead chick with jigsaw circles cut into her tits is in a room. Men in black type shady characters have put everyone to sleep. Double-ended dildo sings Mambo Number 5.
Did you just refer to Jennifer Connelly, one of the most attractive women to ever walk the earth, by just double-ended dildo because of Requiem for a Dream?
Requiem for a Dream, double-ended dildo.
I get the reference. I'm just, yeah. I can't believe you'd reduce her to that.
I'm not reducing her to anything. This is pedestal. If anything, I've lifted her up.
Right. Okay, yeah, fair.
Double-ended dildo sings the Mambo Number 5, then heads to see Kiefer Scientist to discuss her husband, Johnny Murdoch. John goes to collect his wallet from the fruit and jelly restaurant where he has telekinetic powers, apparently.
Yeah,
that's where my notes stop because this film's mental.
At that point, you were just glued to the screen.
No, at this point, I'm 4 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
I've got no clue what's going on. And I'm like, I can't keep looking away from the screen. Every time I look away, I look back and we're in a different fucking realm.
Yes.
I need to pay attention.
Good.
It's amazing. It's awful, but it's amazing.
It's not awful.
I've got questions. I've got points and I've got questions. The main question, from The Crow to Dark City, there is a story involving Alex Proyas traveling from A to B. I have in no way looked up this story. I hope that you have. My question to you is, what happened to Alex Proyas in this time?
Okay. I'm glad you phrased it like that, Ben.
Thank you.
Just for a moment, remember the episode we did covering The Crow?
Yeah.
It's deep in the lore there.
Yeah.
A making of fact of The Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And ask me again, after the making of The Crow.
Yeah.
Massively emotionally affecting things that happened during the making of The Crow?
Nothing that I can think of.
Nothing that you can think of.
Nothing comes to mind. Nothing shoots me directly in the face.
right, okay. Yeah, so you've kind of hit the nail on the head there.
I've shot it.
You've shot it. Yeah. Yeah, you've shot yourself in the leg, as the Russians would say.
Is that a real saying?
Yeah, it's important to a point I've got to make later as well, so put a pin in that.
All right.
Brandon Lee died during the making of The Crow, which Alex Proyas directed. They were really tight. They would spend time not shooting on The Crow, going to the cinema, chatting about projects.
Oh, that's really sweet.
They talked about Dark City because Alex had written it before The Crow, and it was kind of in an early stage, but they were talking about projects they'd like to do together after The Crow.
So he was planning to do this with Brandon Lee?
Yeah.
Fucking
right. He's got no idea about that film. He literally said, honestly, I have no idea what that movie is, talking about The Crow. I haven't seen it since we finished it. I finished the film because Brandon's family wanted me to.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole process, I'd pretty much in a haze. I'd lost a really good friend. All I could do was stick to the plan that was conceived originally. I was in no fit state to redesign the wheel. So his big project with his mate, it's all gone really well. His mate's died because of something that happened on a film that he was in charge of, right? Takes a bit of time, gets a bit, you know, and goes, okay, well, let's make that film then.
Oh, I really like this.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's make that film. And now there's a whole load of ambition. There's a whole load of stuff that he wants to do.
Right.
And we're in that kind of 90s era of filmmaking where we look back now to the 90s and we go, economic boom.
Sure.
Relative peacetime.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of great. And you get that string of movies that are about, everything's kind of fine and I'm still unhappy. Fight Club, Office Space, right?
Yeah, you also get a bunch of movies where everyone's questioning the nature of reality. And it makes me think that, like, when everything's going well, everyone's like, am I real?
Yeah, no.
Is this real?
It's 100% that, because I think there's fundamentally existential dread only really kicks in when there's not a real threat, right?
Right.
If everything in your life that you say is making you unhappy gets fixed and you're still unhappy,
The issue is you,
and you have to start looking inward, which is what we sort of started to do socially in the 90s. You get Nirvana, you get Nine Inch Nails.
Everything
was kind of mint.
Everything
you know,
was
we were in a period of massive plenty.
The Wonder Stuff were a thing.
Okay, there were still issues, major issues.
Okay.
But I feel like this kind of, everyone's talking about, is this all there is? Mm. Am I supposed to just consume, go shopping
yeah,
and work at my office job?
Was I put on this earth to use ancient dinosaur mud to power a car to drive to an office to pay for the car.
Whereas now we're like, oh my God, the world's going to blow up and everything's on fire.
Yeah.
Right? So every week really there's a new war. We can't use a bin without having an existential crisis about the harm we're doing by not putting it in the right colour bin.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time wasted where we don't get to look at our hand and go, is that really mine?
Yeah. If there's space between the atoms in my hand and the atoms in the table, why can't I just go through?
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah,
okay. Oh, this is weird. This is making me feel weird. I don't like this.
So this is the kind of culture that when you say what happened,
yeah,
the 90s and Brandon Lee dying is what happened.
Yeah,
right?
Fair. No, I get it. This film makes more sense now.
Right,
and
good.
I feel like it's gone up a point in my rating because of this.
I feel like as the show goes on,
yeah,
I'm going to slowly peel back these layers of resentment.
Okay.
Until I hit hard bedrock of it's just not for me. And we'll get to that, but I want to chew my way through your meat.
Oh, dude, I'm ready for this. Okay.
Ready to get your meat chewed.
Like I've said, this film is super fun. I love nothing more than finding a spelling mistake on a menu. It tickles my pickle in the right way.
Right.
It makes my experience more enjoyable.
Garlic bed.
If there's a space missing. Do you know what I mean? It's goofy, stupid shit like this. I'm like, and it makes me happy about it. I love this. This is that in a movie.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it sets up so much stuff.
It does.
Like,
it sets up so much stuff.
Bro, the first act is insane. Like, it's the most ambitious act one of a film I've seen ever, possibly. I mean, there's a few that I can pull out, but there's like, this is the biggest one
I've
seen. I mean, it sets up murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You get like a noir detective mystery.
Oh, yeah.
You get an alien invasion / sci-fi / men in black taking over humankind type business.
Alien conspiracies, skinwalkers,
this kind of stuff. You get deep philosophical insights.
Yes, you do.
Questioning the very nature of our reality.
And identity.
And this film follows through on not one of these things in the most spectacular way I've ever seen in cinema. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I've summed up each act in what it meant to me, or what it hit me as, right?
Okay.
This is after the first watch.
Right.
I have watched this film 2.5 times. Only needed to watch the second half after this. The first act is a nightmare.
Right.
I'm exhausted by the end of it. Couldn't do it again. I watched it from act two. That's 40 minutes in. I was like, that's it. That's me done. Slow the pace right down. So I've titled the acts of the film.
Right, okay.
Are you ready for this?
Is it the good, the bad, the stupid?
No. It's very hyper-specific.
Right, okay.
It kind of is the good, the bad, and the stupid, to be fair. Looking at it. Okay. Act one.
Mm-hmm.
Hyperactive, overstimulated, Sin City meets Max Payne.
100% accurate.
Thank you. I feel like I've put my heart and soul into this. Act two. Slowed to a halt. Neo is awoken. Let's get this admin done.
Slows to a halt. Did you watch the director's cut, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, okay.
2.5 times.
We'll get into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Act two, the pacing is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you're now just, it's essentially you're watching a book for a bit.
Yeah.
Which is, it's still entertaining. It's just a different type of entertaining, right? Act three, if you can't beat them, join them. 90s indie, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind meets The Truman Show.
Meets Hellraiser.
Meet, kind of.
Ooh. There's a lot of bald guys in leather.
A lot of Cenobite-y people.
They're all Cenobites. It's Richard O'Brien from the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It is.
Cosplaying as a Cenobite. In fact, I've got an audio clip from Richard O'Brien talking about his time on the film.
Hit me with it.
I just want to play it right now.
Do it.
There is something rather wondrous about that slight bondage kind of look. I must confess, it's a bit rock and roll.
This is the guy that did Crystal Maze. That's the guy that did Crystal Maze.
Okay, now I see your confusion.
Yeah.
I see that you've watched the director's cut.
Yeah.
There's an issue with the director's cut. And there's also an issue with the theatrical cut. This film was a victim of what often happens with studios, right?
Yeah.
Where a studio head comes in, they pick all the movies they want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing great. Mm-hmm. Couple of years later, they're still picking movies, but the studio's not doing so well. So they boot that fella.
Got you.
Generally, mm-hmm. you then clear the slate of all the stuff that he picked.
Okay.
Because it's new regime, you want to get that new energy. Oh, that movie, no, we're not doing that anymore. And things get dropped. Things get cancelled. Look at 2/3 of David Fincher's career.
Yeah.
Just cancelled.
Just
gone, right?
Yeah.
They didn't do that with this one because The Crow, they were like, oh, Alex Proyas, you know, he's just made us a load of money. So what they did instead was like reluctantly string it along with the bare minimum of money.
Right.
And the bare minimum of trust.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So I know this film is quite visually grand. There's a lot of practical gorgeous effects. There's a lot of, considering it was 1998, there's a lot of CGI. Mm. And it's bad CGI, but it wasn't for 1998.
The only way that you can tell it's bad CGI is that it's the darkest film ever.
And
it still looks ropey, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Even Resident Evil looks all right in the dark.
But the total budget of the film was $25
million. Okay.
Now,
that's less than I thought.
For context, that's the same as Basketball.
Okay.
That's a quarter of the budget of Meet Joe Black.
That's
half the budget of Scream 4.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, okay.
That makes sense.
The effects budget was $1
million. $1
million? $1 million for all the effects, practical and CG.
Okay, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
So they're like, have a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And then, it's a weird thing. I listened to Alex Proyas talk about making the movie, and it's just a barrage of like lack of conviction and compromise. And he really strikes me as a man who's got this passion project with this really grand idea.
Yeah.
And he's got it in his head what it could be.
Okay.
And he's got no means of communicating it that people can understand. Because we're before the Matrix.
Oh, of course.
New Line are like, we don't know what the fuck you're talking about, Alex.
Understandably.
Get another writer. So they get David S. Goya, who was known for writing The Blade at the time.
Goya sounds so familiar.
He's kind of had his hand. The Blade trilogy was his big thing.
Okay.
But he also kind of muddied his waters with the DC universe.
Right.
Man of Steel.
Oh, okay.
Remember, he's exec produced on a lot of that.
Right, okay. That's where we know
him from. The worst writer, but not the most cerebral, let's put it that way. He put a lot of action into this movie. He put a lot of the frowning at one another and shooting mind beams.
That was all
Professor
him, was
X.
It?
He couldn't get the studio to understand it. They're like, the audience needs to know what's happening from frame one to frame final. So they get Lem Dobbs in.
Okay.
Now, Lem Dobbs wrote The Hard Way, Hyder in the House, and Gotti with John Travolta.
Right? Okay, yeah.
And I've got a quote from him, actually.
Okay.
You know, you were talking about this film tries a lot.
Yeah.
Well, they got Lem in to try and sort of settle it down.
Okay.
Alex asked if the script was perhaps attempting too much. I don't think you can ever attempt too much.
I think you can attempt
too much.
I think
you can, Lem.
Yeah.
I think you can.
I think you did, Lem.
I think you did. So they've got this kind of three writers now.
Right.
Who don't agree between one another.
Right.
The studio doesn't understand the film, doesn't want it. They're like, but is it real? Is it not real? Who's who? What's going on?
So it's a good mystery is what they're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
The studio wants Johnny Depp.
For who?
For the main character, John Murdoch.
Okay, right? Yeah.
Alex Proyas and Goya are like, but Johnny Depp is always Johnny Depp. This is supposed to be a man with amnesia. This is supposed to be like a John Doe. We don't know who he is.
You know, Johnny Depp's been different people. He was a fucking lizard at one point, wasn't he? Rango. Is he Rango?
He was Rango, yeah. But at 1998, if you see Johnny Depp on screen, that's an anonymous man.
That's Rango.
You go, that's Rango. Right,
yeah,
you don't. Right.
Yeah, I see. All right, I see the issue.
So they sort of go, no, we'll go with Rufus Sewell. So they got in touch with him, who eventually goes on to play, because he was kind of unknown. It's a blank face. People won't have associations. They won't bring anything to it. The whole thing's about identity and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Until the studio were like, oh, Tom Cruise might be interested. So the film got put on hold.
If Tom Cruise was in this film, that would be the last nail in the coffin, right. And it would be my favorite film of all time. I swear to God. Because that would make it so unbelievably ridiculous.
But I think it's just Alex Proyas has got a passion project that he needs to do for emotional reasons.
Okay.
It's a really grand project that needed a lot longer in the oven, writing-wise.
Yeah.
A studio that understood it and believed in it didn't focus, because this was focus group to hell. And every time there was like 20% of the audience that didn't get it, they'd go, you need to make it simpler. So there'd be another round of rewrite.
The idea, and then the rewatchability of it,
right?
I'd want to understand the mystery.
So for the theatrical release, they forced him to put a bit of narration in the opening seconds of the film, in which Kiefer Sutherland sits there and goes, the strangers, they came from before time and space. They change our memories. Literally gives away all of the plot up until about the end of Act 2 in an opening monologue before the film starts.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
Right.
Very first thing, before we see anything, Kiefer Sutherland explains the entire mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get into the, who am I?
Yes.
But the mystery's been
spoiled
already.
What is going on? Who are these mysterious people?
But Kiefer Scientist has just explained it all to you.
Kiefer Scientist explains it all.
Right.
Which is why there's a couple of reasons this movie fell flat on its face. That's a big part of them.
Yeah, right? I can imagine.
Right. It's the sled he had as a child. Rosebud.
Oh, yeah.
Less,
yeah. Jesus
less compelling.
Christ.
So then the director's cut, which is the one you watch by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Alex Proyas went the other way.
Went way too far the other way.
Went way too far the other way. I'm not going to explain anything. I'm going to have massive exposition dumps in Act Two.
Yeah.
And I'm going to up the weirdness and try and make it kind of interesting and mysterious again. It's like,
right,
dude, we're in 2008 now. Like, no one.
Yeah.
No one's wondering how you got the rabbit out of that hat anymore, dude. Like,
right? We've seen The Matrix, buddy.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I'm kind of understanding a little bit more about Proyas and why he made it and how it got to where it is. It makes more sense now, right. And I feel like I'm a little bit more forgiving towards it.
And it feels like all of the things that all of the ingredients he reached for this salad,
yeah,
are great ingredients.
Amazing ingredients.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he was reaching for an onion and someone gave him onion powder.
Yeah.
And he was reaching
for
a clove of garlic and someone gave him garlic, jarlic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he's like, I can have some lettuce. They're like, you can have rocket.
We've got a bit of spinach.
We've got a bit of spinach.
But it's been cooked. Will that work? It's wilted. Yeah. Will it work?
Yeah.
It's got to work. Enjoy
it. It has to work because you're halfway through this film.
Yeah. Also, Tom Cruise might come in to cut the chicken and you're like, oh, fucking hell, go on then. 7 months later, there is no chicken.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail on the head.
I love that everything comes back to food with us.
It's just, do you know what it is? My chefy years working as a chef for all of 24 months.
Right.
I've infiltrated the pod.
24 months? Just say 2 years. What are you, a mum?
I was going to do 2.5 years and then I couldn't do the maths. So I panicked. It's like the other day when I said Nicaragua.
So right.
Because you just said,
quickly.
You said name a random country.
Yeah.
And my brain just came up with that and I'd only ever read it. So I just said it out of panic.
Right. Yeah. That's one thing. Not being able to add up 24 and 6 is another thing.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about that later. just a brief catch up.
Oh, I'm word dyslexic, so it's fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Unlike you number dyslexics, you filth. All right?
Yeah, all right.
Fucking hell.
Do you want me to start putting all the numbers in yellow for you?
I'd love that.
On the sheet.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
Or just do them as check marks.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Then I can count.
Back to this film. I'm gonna bring up something that confused me a little bit. This entire film is based on every person that's been abducted by the strangers.
Okay, I see where you've gotten confused. So they're aliens.
Yes.
And they swap memories.
That's not an issue for me.
Okay.
My issue is that we see the strangers and Kiefer Scientist changing people's memories with an injection, right?
Yeah, they get a needle and they slam it between the eyes of the person.
Yeah, it's
the
in their
person,
forehead.
And they squeeze in a juice.
Yeah.
And it memory juice.
Yeah. So into their forehead.
Yeah.
It's a hypodermic needle to the forehead.
With a drill bit on the end, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Kiefer then goes on to explain in this film, during a scene on the river where the main characters are going to the beach, that sounds made up, but it's 100% real. Kiefer gives us an entire exposition dump that renders the first act mysteries weak, feeble, and almost pointless.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's a poor resolution.
It's odd. And he explains that they change memories every night, and it's this, that, and the other. We see certain cuts of it every now and then.
Yeah.
My issue lies in this. We see certain people have their memories changed.
Yeah.
We see like 5 or 6 people. There's one scene that screams to me where we see a couple of very poor people.
Yeah. It's like you and a missus in a flat.
Exactly.
Doing your poor people things.
Doing poor people things.
And then
beans.
They put them to sleep. They put memory juice in them. They magic the house into a rich person's house.
Yes.
And then they wake up and they're talking rich people.
So you know this scene. Now my issue is,
right,
those poor people had neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Those poor people had friends, family. And they had, I'm assuming, unemployment centers to go to, checks to cash, stuff to do, just day-to-day life. Because these scientific experiments that the strangers are doing are insanely specific. They're like, we're going to make this person poor, but also give them an entire backstory to let them play out. Now, you're going to be interacting with people.
Yeah.
You're going to have acquaintances. You're going to have people that you go drinking with at the bar.
And they go, oh, you've won the lottery.
You woke up one day and you're no longer poor or that name and you live in a mansion.
Yeah.
People are going to know.
Okay.
Unless you change every single person's memory ever. Because even in passing, Rob, didn't know you and we crossed each other in the street twice a week.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you rocked
Rolls,
up in like a Rolls Royce Wraith with a Gucci suit and then you're living in a mansion. I'm going to be like, fuck happened to you?
Yeah, I've got a northerner on a leash.
But you're going to sit there because your memories have been changed and you're going to go, who are you, peasant boy?
Right, okay. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable continuing to do a podcast with such a bigot.
How am I a bigot?
Look at this way, Ben. You're fine with like human battery logic, right? Even though you know humans need calories to survive, you're fine with the Matrix where the machines are using human bodies as batteries. You don't pick that logic apart. You're fine with the Matrix. You're fine with that.
It's a good energy source. That makes sense.
No, it doesn't. It's nonsense.
Does. In that universe, that makes sense.
Right, okay. So you feed the humans, you use some of that energy.
Yeah.
Turn the food into energy. It's the same argument as veganism.
No, because you're putting the food into a machine. The machine is what makes energy. That's like saying drink petrol. It'll get you from A to B.
All I'm saying is you don't question the Matrix because it's got Carrie Ann Moss and PVC. The second you put Richard O'Brien in leather, you choke on it.
Arguably.
Homophobe.
Arguably, I'm more attracted to
Richard O'Brien than Harry. That's bizarre.
Is it? Okay. Crystal Maze was a big part of my life,
buddy. Okay, is that what it is? Yeah. Right, okay. Big part of your life.
Yeah.
That TV was sticky at 5 o'clock.
I mean, sometimes.
You know, okay. No, I just think it's Matrix is coding. This is magic. All right. And both are equally soft laws. Yeah.
I get that, but they set it up to be this
one,
thing.
With this one, you're like, oh, no, because it's men.
No, it's bigot. Not because it's men. Right? It's not because it's men. It's because it sets a rule in its own universe.
Okay. Give me another example.
The line kill him, right?
Oh, yeah, there's the little kid.
The little kid at the end.
Stranger, he goes,
I've got this.
Kill him.
Yeah, so that line, right? So the strangers spend the entire movie trying to get a human soul into one of their own to save their species. That was in loose air quotes for you listeners. But hear me out now, because Johnny Murdoch does this.
Yeah.
The strangers examine his fingerprint with a massive monocle. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. They can change the entire city to be whatever they want it to be. They can rearrange it every 24 hours. They can apparently change the memory of every single person in one night.
Yeah.
But they still use a massive monocle to check a fingerprint.
Ben, you're sat with a silicon brain on your lap.
Yeah.
Whilst wearing glasses.
Yeah.
All right. Don't sight shame people.
It's not sight shaming.
Right.
It's more if I had the money or the ability
to make
a machine.
Yeah, okay.
I would get laser.
Yeah, fair.
In a heartbeat.
Right.
But
okay.
What I'm saying is, right, so this entire scene, they've been working their asses off. All they do are these insane scientific experiments to get the human soul and this. Johnny Murdoch evolves to have a human soul and be one of them. He has the power to tune.
Been searching for, and then the little kid's like...
And then the little kid... It's not just the little kid. The little kid says, kill him. And then every other cunt in that room is kill him.
You see...
What are you talking about?
What you've done, Ben, is you've shot yourself in the leg. Because in Russian and quite a few Slavic languages, there's only one word for hand and arm and only one word for foot and leg.
Okay.
And context will determine the meaning, right?
Sure.
Let me take your arm hand.
Sure.
Right. Oh, okay, you mean hand.
Yeah.
You know, you grab your shoulder and you go, oh, my arm hand hurts. People go, oh, he means his arm because he's touching his arm.
Yeah.
We don't know their language. He might just kill life to them. Bearing in mind these are squid aliens that are living in corpses.
That speak perfect English for the rest of the film.
We don't know. No, it's a Chinese room situation, Ben.
It's not.
Chinese room situation.
Don't know what that is, but I can guarantee you it's not.
it's just a translation error. He's a little lad, and he goes, kill him. What he actually means is turn him into one of us.
He's not a little lad. He's an alien squid in a little lad's dead body.
Okay, contentious. Last one. You got one more chance to prove
that this
is nonsense.
I've got one more on this. You ready?
Because I'm working on a big rebuttal here.
This is the biggest rebuttal. This is the one.
Right.
Because you can't refute this at all. It is the strangers.
Mm.
There's a moment in the film when we find out that the strangers are phobic of water.
Yeah.
It's a big no-no for them. They don't like it at all. They don't like light, so they turn the entire city away from the sun. That makes sense, because they don't like the sun.
Yeah.
But with water, big phobia.
Mm-hmm.
If you control everything in this world, and everything can be changed just with a thought, by yourself.
Yeah.
Why do you program rivers into your world, famously full of water? Why would you have that there?
Right.
Why?
Canals, but it's fine.
Are there swimming pools?
Right.
Because there's swimming pools in there. That's coded in. Someone's thought that up and it's put it in there. That's fine. And why the fuck is this dark city always covered in puddles like it's just been raining for hours? If, like, all the streets are wet. It's like if you built a world and flooded it with crabs,
mm-hmm.
or if I built a world and flooded it with owls and cotton wool, it doesn't make any fucking
cotton
sense.
Cotton wool's a new one on me.
It's not a new one. That's the oldest one.
Okay,
I just don't like telling people about it.
So if I were to take like a cotton wool ball and squeak it in front of the mic, do you get that crunchy noise?
No, it feels like my bones are being turned inside out.
Right, okay. So if I put that in episodes randomly, it just comes up when you're in the car.
It just wouldn't be another episode.
Exactly. No,
I'd upload a 7-minute episode of me covering the B-movie and then just have a massive fuck you at the end of it.
For new listeners, Ben and I have decided that the last movie we'll ever cover
is the B-movie.
Because we're going to do them all, but yeah. when we get to the last one, we're saving the B-movie till last. Because Ben loves B-movies. Look, you bring up a good point with the rain.
The water phobia. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, why you're in control.
But
why
once again, I've got you.
Come on.
Think about when you're back in school, yeah? Mm-hmm. It's one of the first things you learn in geography or science. The water cycle.
Right.
Rain leads to rivers, leads to the sea.
Right.
Right? It's a cycle of renewal. In Dark City, we have rain all the time.
Right.
But no sea. Because the natural order is broken.
Right.
Shell Beach is a place that all inhabitants remember but cannot reach. Is that like longing for the natural, unmanipulated world. And it symbolizes the sort of innate human desire for that natural cycle, right? The beacon of hope that one day I will be different to this because I will grow, I will move through a cycle. I won't be randomly moved about, right?
Okay.
People should be dying. Life should be moving forward. We should be living as part of a cycle, but we're not. People are swapped around, kept in place. It's always raining.
Right.
But they never return to the sea. They're kept in a permanent state of rain. And to back this point up, this sort of subtextual point about the human soul and its need to live in a natural cycle, William Hurt asked why, if the strangers had a fear of water, would the streets be wet all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Alex replied, my response to that, of course, was, well, because it looks cool, which I don't think was a great answer.
Fucking hell. Right.
It's the rule of cool, Ben.
Okay.
It's an industrial 1940s anachronistic time thing. The swimming pool.
Yeah.
I'm going to argue, if you've got a little human pet that you need to keep on side.
Right.
He needs his little hamster cage where he can feel safe. You build him a little swimming pool and you go, sure. Don't worry, mate. If you feel a little bit worried, go to the swimming pool.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And he can sit there and go, I'm in my pool, I'm safe. He's gotten something out of it. He's got his little nest.
The only issue is now is that pool's full of crabs and you can't go there. So he can get up to all sorts of menaces.
I can still gun him.
Make it a...
I can gun him from a distance.
No, you can't.
Mate, gun beats crabs.
Gun beats crabs, I guess.
You ever played rock, paper, crabs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gun always wins.
Gun always wins,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. All right.
So it's
I get it.
There's subtext there. It's not realized.
There?
Yeah, it's not realized.
Okay.
It's the seed of subtext. Again, they lay all the trails, they plant all the seeds, and then they just never fucking water them. Ironically, for the amount that it rains.
I just think
none of these seeds are watered.
This is what I mean. It doesn't make sense to my brain. At all.
Okay.
I think the Shell Beach thing, I think it's planted there. I think it's like a comfort thing.
People, they can remember. You can't have that environment,
but
you can give people the memory of that environment. So they think it's there. They think it's an option.
This
it's
is
the
what
illusion
I mean.
Of choice.
Make it a fucking theme park. Make it anything. Anything fun. Yeah. And a day off. Bank holiday weekend. There you go. That's a good memory. Bank holiday coming up next week.
Don't,
I'll be like, God,
don't.
Yeah.
Because at work at the moment, I've started this month.
Yeah.
I've got a certain target of videos to get done every week. And it feels like every week is a 4-day week. It's a 5-day workload on a 4-day week. And I'm like, bank holidays are rubbish.
Now imagine you were on top of your quota and you're like, God, I've been working for 2 months now. I could really do with a bank holiday. And the strangers have put a billboard up reminding you that it's bank holiday. How good are you going to feel?
Yeah.
Now, picture you're terrified of bank holiday Mondays. Would you still put that fucking billboard up? Be
no,
a little pet
yeah,
in his hamster
okay,
cage.
Fair,
this
fair,
is the
fair.
Point. It's,
okay, but look, dude. I've, no.
There's questionable choices that the strangers make. Now, this isn't for me to say that I understand why, because I don't fully understand the laws in this universe.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. And here's my question.
Okay.
You love Godzilla.
Where is this going?
Right. You love Godzilla.
I do. I love Godzilla.
Godzilla as a creature.
Yes.
Cannot exist on the planet because the reason elephants and giant tree sloths and T-Rexes and all these kind of things had a maximum size. It's because the amount of volume that you need to get to that height places too much strain on the heart, because at a certain level, meat just can't move fluid around a thing that big, right?
I understand.
The heart can't contract and move stuff around.
Yeah.
Bones can't grow
okay.
to support that much weight on those knees, right? So I can look at Godzilla and I can go, it's not real, mate.
Yeah, it's not real. But
nonsense.
But it pays attention to its own laws.
I don't then start picking apart all of the...
This is the thing, I do.
You
do. Even with Godzilla.
Pick everything apart.
Godzilla, it's my favourite thing. I just want to understand the rules, Rob.
Right.
I like living by the rules. It's,
right.
It's a good
thing.
But
your favourite films are the ones where the rules are disrespected.
No,
unless it's one
not.
I like, and then you're like,
no,
do you know
no,
what's
no,
the
no.
shittest thing in the world
out.
Is?
Hear me out. The rules are always respected. Godzilla, nuclear knees, that shit can be held up by everything.
Right, okay.
And in one of the films, his heart stops completely, gets a bit of nuclear in him,
mm-hmm.
he's back to it.
Right.
He's all right. That's nuclear powered. That's just good energy.
Right.
I think we should invest in nuclear.
The,
you know what I mean?
The problem that I have is I brought up Godzilla when what I really need to bring up was the gorge.
The gorge is even better.
It's nonsense.
The gorge is even better.
It's nonsense. It sets up rules.
Yeah.
It follows none of them.
It follows all of them.
It follows none of them.
All of the rules in the gorge are followed. It's east and west working together. There's a few anomalies that occur. And I'll agree with you, there are a few anomalies that occur.
Right.
But everything that happens in universe for a reason.
And Miles Teller gets his foot crushed by a Jeep and he walks on it like nothing has happened.
He climbs up a cliff immediately after.
Yeah.
That's just good American bones.
Is it
right
nuclear
there.
Knees?
That's
is
good
it
American bones.
Right, okay,
that
right,
that's
okay.
milk.
That's milk.
That's American dairy right there, buddy.
Okay, fair.
This is
fair.
Just good. It's
Tammy
just...
and the T-Rex.
Oh, don't even get me started. That's the perfect film.
Right. I don't see how this is different from Tammy and the T-Rex.
No T-Rex. No Tammy.
You've got Richard O'Brien in bondage gear walking around with Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
You've got a little goth kid going, kill him.
Yeah.
You got Rufus Sewell.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Yeah, from Old, who I didn't realise.
From A Knight's Tale, come on, mint film.
Come on. Old.
Oh.
He plays a mental doctor in Old. It's incredible.
How can you like Old and not like this? Like, this is a smorgasbord of, like, beautiful imagery and references and...
Dude.
It's got beautiful things. What can you not like about this film?
Setting up the rules,
mm-hmm.
following the rules, I am more than happy to suspend belief, right? I can live in a world of suspended belief for as long as need be, as long as that world also lives in that suspended belief.
Yes.
Without moving goalposts too much.
Fair.
A little bit I'm fine with. If we look at Ghostbusters,
mm-hmm.
I'm in a universe where ghosts are real.
Yeah.
Everything, that's just an accepted fact now. The science behind that is well fleshed out enough, not explained in the amount of detail where it can be like critically pulled apart, but it's explained to a point where I can trust that the film knows exactly what these instruments are doing and how they work, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's very clear about small private businesses should be allowed to do whatever they want and the Environmental Protection Agency can't do anything about it.
For the greater good.
Because,
the
small businessman is more important than the environment. Yes.
Well, I mean, the general...
But climate change, it's a lie. Republicans are great. Yes.
General public is better. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As long as your product sells, morality doesn't matter and you
like
should not
this
be regulated.
This whole pro-government look on you is great. Yeah,
right,
it's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So the EPA and Ghostbusters, famously the human villains who are like trying to shut them down because they're like, no, you can't do good without going through us because we can't make money on this.
Right.
It's a big like power play. It's a complex thing. It's interesting that you would choose
right,
that
Trump.
Side to
all
sit
right,
on.
Trump. Yeah, yeah.
How am I Trump in this?
Oh, it's fine. Just get on with your point. Get on with your silly point. Get on with your...
Ghostbusters suspends belief. I can go along with that because it sticks to it. It doesn't change the goalposts
too
much.
It does stick to its
rules. Very consistent.
It's
very sort of... It's almost strict with its own rules. And that's where I can suspend belief. I can feel safe in that. I know where we're going. I know where we're ending up. I know that it's not going to go too far left, too far right. It's just there.
Yeah.
I don't understand a single part of this film.
I see your point. Mm-hmm. It doesn't follow its own rules. And there's a lot of messy, soft sci-fi. There's a lot of like, well, it's magic or it's alien technology or we're not really sure how that works or we think it... A character will say it works this way.
Yeah.
But they're not speaking from a position of authority.
Right.
They're speaking from a position of experience. And then they're later proved to be wrong, which is confusing for an audience because It sounds like a rule is being established and blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
Blah. But when you have a mystery, you're asking the audience to engage their brains and use what they know about the world and their powers of deduction to figure out what might be the next step. When you try and marry that with sci-fi, which is, here is a world we have invented, you only know about what we tell you about this world.
Sure.
But it's a mystery, so we're not going to tell you that much about this world. It's a really difficult thing to stitch together.
Don't know enough about the realm.
Exactly.
To have a ground in,
mysteries
to follow the mystery.
Mysteries are always best when they're set in relatable circumstances. Or like with human characters.
Reality adjacent stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah, where you can go, okay, someone would behave like this. This would motivate that person.
Okay.
We can't speak to the stranger's motives. They're fucking aliens.
Yeah, I guess.
We can't speak to the rules of the universe because it's a fucking floating spaceship city surrounded by a force field. Trying to do a mystery in a fantasy sci-fi is a nightmare. It really needs a bit more than $25 million and a massively shortened shooting schedule and three writers with a studio that doesn't believe in you. But
I
get this.
The potential of this film's like untamed. It's unmatched by anything. I can't think of another film that sets itself up to be what this sets itself up to be.
This film is like trying to fit three magnets together at once, right?
It is trying to fit.
You can get two, but a third one just pushes out the way.
Yeah.
Because you've got German expressionism with the set design, Metropolis. It's a bit Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah.
You've got that kind of film noir, Maltese Falcon, 1950s, the Dame walked in, blah, blah, blah. It's Matrix meets Max Payne video games.
Mm-hmm.
The CGI is aged terribly. The execution is clunky. But the visual style is so grand and so committed. It's pre a film that would come out a year later.
Right.
Involving a fake world where the protagonist is chased by three agents.
Mm-hmm.
The fake world is there to study humans. He gets one-like powers, ends up blended with an agent to create a version of them both featuring squid aliens.
Yeah.
It's the Matrix before the Matrix.
It is the Matrix before the Matrix.
And
I like this.
And we see the Matrix happen a year later and it becomes one of the most important sci-fi films of all time.
Yeah.
Didn't cost $25 million.
No.
Didn't have Nosferatu villains and the guy from the Crystal Maze talking about kink and bondage.
But it was...
cohesive. Yeah.
It was...
Yeah, totally.
Paying attention to its own rules.
Totally.
It also was a good example of a sci-fi mystery.
Yeah, it was.
Do you know what
it
mean?
Was. But again, I remember being a kid and all the marketing being like, what is The Matrix?
Yeah.
And loads of reviewers being like, we didn't... When we covered The Matrix for an earlier episode, we were talking about how few people on the set making the film had any clue what the film was about.
Oh, yeah,
we don't understand this.
Yeah.
And to watch Dark City now, in a post-Matrix, we get it. The metaverse, VR, we understand this. It's such a sort of sci-fi cliche at this point. To do it as a dark film noir fantasy film was visionary.
Oh, it was 100% visionary.
Dude,
as much as I have issues with this film, it's fucking amazing. It's amazing for what it wanted to do, for what it executed and what it ended up being. With all the problems that we've spoken about, I now understand that, this would have been something.
There are ingredients in this that The Matrix doesn't even approach.
Yeah,
because this has got, who are you? Are you your memories?
I've got this all down. So I've got three little points here. This is a new segment that I'm bringing to the show.
Oh, yeah, new seggy.
It's going to be, it's just going to touch on like themes that the film touches on, but it never really elaborates on. I'm going to call this Eggy. Could have.
Right, okay.
Could have.
Right.
All right. Identity and memory. The film suggests points like identity is not rooted in memories, but are within actions and innate character.
Yeah, it touches on all of that.
Johnny Murdoch's given memories of being a serial killer.
Yep.
Despite this, does he go on a killing spree? Does he carry on killing? No, he does not. He resists his assigned role, that was in loose air quotes, because that's not who he is. It's not, he's not his memories. And that's a fucking incredible point. Could have gone deeper into the societal constructs and how that influences identity.
Yeah.
So how, like, your identity is molded by what you present to your environments.
Yep.
That would have been an amazing thing to look at. We never see sort of like a group's reaction to a memory change.
Nope.
It's always an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always specifically Johnny Murdoch.
Yeah, 100%.
If we had had like glimpses of anyone else. Oh, yeah. I guess we got the cop.
Walensky. Yeah.
Walensky, the one who ends up killing
himself. Mental cop who's lost his mind. And he provides the same role in the story.
Right.
That the 25-second bits of narration that Kiefer Sutherland does at the first part of the film. Once Kiefer Sutherland has told you all of that, you don't need the mental detective to later be right about everything.
The thing, oh God, someone's just clicked on me as well. He's like a big key to the mystery, right? And it's also like around the end of Act One that he does his little exposition dump and
about
okay, so this might be what's happening.
Yeah.
And then the film slows to a cripplingly slow mm-hmm. pace and just ignores everything because you're like, that's been answered.
Well, if you imagine if you didn't have that bit of narration, you'd have your first act mm-hmm. where you didn't know what was going on. Walensky would then tell you, and you'd then need the audience to have a bit of a rest where they could digest that.
100%, yeah.
Which would make perfect sense to have a slightly slower act.
Yeah.
Not in any version of the film that exists, though.
No.
No.
All right, I've got another one. Free will versus control. So the strangers are manipulating the entire environment. They mm-hmm. can change literally anything and everything they want to do, right?
Yeah.
People's identities, turning the city into like some weird psychological laboratory.
Yeah, so it's a rat maze. It's a rat maze for humans so we can be studied.
Huge scientific study.
Mm-hmm.
Murdoch's evolution is about reclaiming his autonomy, mm-hmm. like being the person that he truly is, right? And
we get to
see this unfold on screen. Gorgeous little bit of writing there. Could have shown multiple people
mm-hmm.
having glimpses of awareness or like a brief.
Well, moment. You do get bits of that because everyone that he interacts with begins to fall off script. Everyone he has a conversation with.
His wife doesn't.
She begins to trust him. She begins to believe him.
Okay.
There's a couple of philosophical things in it. So there's a thing called Plato's Cave.
Okay.
Very, very old philosopher, Plato, around about the time of Aristotle, Greek philosophers, mm-hmm. classic philosopher. And the cave allegory is that because we've got our senses, our ears, eyes, nose, this kind of stuff, they're just tools we use to experience reality. And everything we experience is filtered through them. So we don't actually know what reality is. We just get an experience of it through our senses. So it's a little bit like we don't live in the world. We live in a cave. And we see shadows of the real world cast on the wall of the cave.
Okay.
And so we think the world is made of shadows and light.
Got you.
But we don't know what it is. We're limited by the mouth of that cave, which is 100% this film being like, you don't know.
Yeah.
You only know what you see with this kind of thing. There's a Bertrand Russell philosophy called Last Thursdayism,
mm-hmm.
which is about we kind of assume that the world has a certain age.
Yeah.
But it could have all been created last Thursday. We can't demonstrate that it wasn't created to look older.
Yeah. That's all great stuff. My next point on reality and perception, all of that shit was a great answer to if you'd have given me a minute.
We're tight.
If you'd have given me 1 minute.
I'm sorry.
But no, you have summed it up. So it does go into reality and perception. But it does it more than this, though. It challenges the human perception of what's happening around, like, is mm-hmm. what's happening to me the same as you?
Yeah.
Is what's happening to us
mm-hmm.
the same as what's happening on the other side of the globe?
Am I my memories?
Exactly. Yeah. Am I me or am I what people think of me?
Right.
Am I just what people perceive?
Yeah.
Is that the same as what I feel I am?
Mm-hmm.
Does that matter? All of this stuff plays into it.
And it's all there enough that critics loved this film. There's a huge number of critics that thought this was brilliant. And I thought it was brilliant when I watched it because I was early teens. I was really interested in all that kind of stuff we've just been talking about.
Yeah.
I was having my moment to be like, oh my God, am I real? Is this real?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe no one will fuck me because I'm not real.
Mm.
So I found it at the right time in the right place. And it feels like a movie that, given a little bit more time in the blender,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a little bit less time in the blender.
Either or would have been
fine. It would have been great because it's got the exactly wrong amount of madness.
Yeah.
If it had been a bit madder,
mm-hmm.
it would have been visionary.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been like a David Lynch Dune, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it had been a bit less mad, it would have been a fun blockbuster.
Yeah.
But it's none of those things. It's in this horrible halfway house of having really interesting stuff that goes nowhere and really boring stuff that doesn't need to be there.
I think it's just confused. It's just a bit confused.
It's confused. Yeah. I mean, it didn't do well. It was put on hold for a very long time because Titanic came out. So they did a lot of promotion. It got an R rating, which...
rating?
Yeah.
For what? What's in the film that's R rated?
There's a bit of Melissa George's titty.
Sure.
There's a lot of murder of women.
I mean, there's two. There's
a lot of needles in their head.
Fuck off. None of this is R rated stuff. It's a 15 at
David
best.
David S. Goyer would agree with you. Okay. And he had a big debate with the ratings agency. They were all there trying to get this down from an R rating.
Right.
The people in the meeting just went, it's just really weird.
Right.
It's just a really weird film.
But that doesn't, R rating doesn't just mean this is a weird movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So they ended up having to market it as a horror.
Right.
And then had to wait to release the movie after the marketing to wait for Titanic to be out of cinemas because nobody wanted to go into the cinema against Titanic.
Right, okay.
Because why would you?
Fair.
And it barely made its budget back.
Okay.
Barely.
Well, I can understand why, to be honest with you. I can understand why.
Oh, there's another bit of philosophy in there. So Greek mythology, Zeus, you know, the father of all gods.
Yeah.
John Murdoch, he gets the tuning powers, he defeats the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the first thing he does? He creates a sun. Yeah. So he's a sun god.
Yeah.
It's the second thing he does. Tries to fuck a mortal woman.
Yeah, there you go.
There's your Greek mythology.
There you go. I like it.
Do you, John, play a game?
Yeah, hit me with it.
Well, you'll be pleased to know I've taken a leaf out of your book this week.
Okay.
I have Googled the name of the film, followed by quiz.
Nice.
And gotten a 10-question quiz that I've not read.
These are mint. These are the best ones.
So how well do you know Dark City?
Is this on funtrivia.com?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, sick.
In which city was the movie Dark City filmed?
New York.
No. Sydney, Australia, on sound stages.
Okay.
Large parts of which were then immediately used for the next film coming in, The Matrix.
Oh, sick.
So that initial rooftop chase
with
Trinity going through the rooftops.
Amazing.
Same rooftops John Murdoch was being chased across.
Amazing.
It's almost like this is a proto-Matrix, huh?
I love it.
Who plays the character Inspector Frank Bumstead?
I'm not sure.
I've mentioned his name a couple
times.
Yeah,
I know. I looked it up earlier as well. I can't remember his name.
It's William Hurt.
William Hurt.
Bonus question. There's only internet points in it for this.
Go on.
Is he related to John Hurt from Alien?
No.
Correct. Have all the internet points.
Thank you.
Now, this is a difficult one.
Go on.
We've not really talked about this.
Yeah.
What's the name of the mythical place that John Murdoch searches for throughout the movie?
Shell Beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like you'd only need to watch the trailer to know that.
Yep.
Is Dark City located on Earth?
No.
No. What train does John Murdoch try to catch in an effort to get to Shell Beach?
The Express.
Only two left. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Why are the strangers so intent on capturing John Murdoch?
For his soul? Because he can tune. Okay.
The other answers were he's the next step in human evolution,
right,
or he represents a grave danger to the strangers, or all answers are correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the eventual fate of Inspector Bumstead?
Gets thrown out into space.
He does, yeah. He falls off the city and disappears into space. Shall we find out your score?
Go on.
A perfect score. Nice job.
I mean, I didn't know William Hurt's name.
We got there, though. We did it together. We did it as mates.
That's fine.
You know?
All right. Yeah, I'm in. Comment corner. I've got some Spotify comments because I have ignored them for too long. Sorry about this. So I got one from Matt Bolton on our Critters episode.
Oh.
He says, fur flies and fuckers die.
That would have been a great act title.
That's a great act three title.
Because we, act three
yeah,
title
we had a debate about
where
what
you
it would
went,
be.
Fur flies lazy. And...
some shit. I can't remember.
Fur flies and people die. No.
I don't even remember what it was.
It was memorable.
Let me have a look.
We've got Ag Fox commented on our Tammy and the T-Rex episode.
She did?
She said, Tammy Fanny. And I hate
Tammy Fanny.
I hate that that's a thing that people do.
They said Tammy Fanny.
They said.
There you go.
I hate that that's a thing that people say now.
I love it.
Of course you do.
I want that on my tombstone.
Well, speaking of things you want on your tombstone, can I do the last one?
Go for it.
Andrea got in touch and just said, Crap podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what we wanted.
We try hard to get that.
Yeah.
I feel like we put a lot of effort into that feedback.
A bunch of people for this. Zachary on our Roadhouse episode says, tuned in expecting my favorite film, Scott Pilgrim, but fully here for this throwback. Love how Rob immediately jumped on board with this crazy theory when he realized how much it meant to his good pal Ben. Not me crying on my way to work. Welcome to Midlands, Rob. Keep up the great work. Zachary, thank you, you beautiful bastard.
What a lovely thing.
Lovely. Thanks, absolutely,
babe.
Lovely.
We've got
one more thing that we need to say before we start wrapping the show up.
Oh, this is an important one.
Important. Brace yourselves. Our very, very dear friend John at the Boardroom Gaming Cafe. It's his birthday.
It is his birthday.
It's his birthday. So happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday, John.
Thank you for everything. You are an absolute diamond. Love you wholeheartedly. The things you do, not just for us being mates and all this stuff, but the stuff you do for everyone and the stuff that you guys do at the Boardroom Gaming Cafe is insane. We love you for it. Thank you very much.
It's a very, very short list of people that I can say very, very grateful to have met with no reservations. John's on that list all day, every day. He's incredible.
He's a rare specimen of a human.
The Boardroom Gang are all mint and eternal love. What are you rating Dark City?
5.
5?
5 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's passable. It's a fun watch to go. What's happening?
I feel like I don't know the 5 points. It's based on this episode. I don't know the 5 points you've given it.
Okay, so the 5 points I've given it are, it sets itself up to be this insane movie, right? The premise of the film itself is fucking mind-bending.
Yeah.
The way that it executes Act 1 and to a certain point Act 3 is monumental. It's an incredible feat. It's an incredible try at doing something that would have truly been 1,000% groundbreaking. Yep. This would have changed cinema forever if it had just happened the way that it was supposed to.
yeah.
If it had just done what it was supposed to do.
If it had Brandon Lee and a load of money.
This would have changed cinema forever. And for that, 5 points. Also, it gets 5 points because as much as I've been like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It blows my brain a little bit. Why is this happening? That shit's fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fun to watch a film for.
Right.
I live on B-movies. this is my bread and butter.
Fair.
How about you?
It's a fat 10.
Fuck off.
And I'll tell you for why now.
Fuck off.
I'll tell you for why now. This is going to be a one-time rating.
Go on.
I'd much rather sit and watch a swing and a miss at something truly interesting than watch somebody ably achieve something fine.
Okay.
Because the ingredients here, the idea is mint, and it comes back to, I got the idea to cover this from Critters when we were talking about films that needed a remake that really kind of gelled together, and it got me thinking, why are we remaking good films had good execution?
We should
remake great ideas with bad execution, and this for me is the number one candidate I can think of a film that would do fantastically with like a Chris Nolan remake.
Yeah,
right.
I'm not going to argue. That sounds great. I'd watch a remake of this.
It's a fat 10. Okay. It's a fat 10 because it tried and because I watched it at the right time.
Fair. Fair. I can appreciate that, buddy. I can appreciate that. But that's it. Unfortunately, we're at the end of the show. We love you all dearly. Thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Your support means the fucking world to us.
It really does. Now go tell your friends how much fun it is in here.
Get them in.
If you see something of ours on social media, sharing it to your story, even if you've got two friends on there, makes the algorithm think that our stuff's shareable and it shows us to more people.
It does.
So please do that. Same with comments, all that kind of stuff. Ben is going to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us.
Yeah.
Especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. By wrapping up the thoughts, themes, and feelings. Every thought that this film has, Ben is going to wrap up into a really concise, motivational pep talk.
Yeah.
While I just tell you to do what Dark City and the rest of society always tell you to do, and that's just consume.
Listen, you gain godlike powers. You can manipulate physical matter. You can change the world around you. Take a leaf out of Dark City's book, right? You can have an introspective journey, and you can end it on like a powerful. Like, is this really me? Do I change the world for the better? Or you do what this film did do, and you go, I'm an all-powerful god. See my power. It's a masturbatory fantasy. I'ma go fuck this woman. See yous later. See yous later.
Fucking hell, mate. Do you want to make that any longer?
I was trying to pause a little bit longer. You know what I mean?
Jesus Christ.
That was my last could have, by the way.